Evening again to everybody, and welcome to those of you who may be our guests here tonight. I've gotten to meet some of our friends who are with us, and we are grateful for your presence. We are so thankful for our folks here who show generosity in a number of ways. Thanks to Travis for all of the lunch cooked up today. I found out something that's not quite scriptural, but it's close at least. They who are last shall be last. And I got there too late with some things. And I can't say that I missed out, though. I found it other places. I told you this morning that I want to think with you tonight about something a little bit different, but I think relevant. I met Howard Norton some years ago when our son was a student at Oklahoma Christian University. Brother Norton at the time was serving as the chair of the Bible department in the university. He was also serving as the pulpit minister for the Memorial Road congregation, which was very much a growing congregation in that area, and he was serving at the time as the editor of the Christian Chronicle, a newspaper. This was several years back. Brother Norton moved on to Harding after that, but I remember meeting him in the student center and sitting down to visit with him for a few minutes. I noticed a piece that he wrote that caught my attention. He says, as a young preacher, while working night and day, oftentimes 7 days a week, a visiting preacher used 2 or 3 days of teaching to describe how little the church was doing. The lessons almost drove me over the edge. I was running as fast as I could. How could I do more? And he said, following the tradition through the traditional thought that preachers should comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, he was trying to afflict the comfortable. But since I was already running as fast as I could, his lessons almost did me in. Tonight I want to stop and say to us that you and I both know that many times we have people who are not doing what they should or could. But you and I also both know that when we try to do lessons to urge us on in those ways, the people who take them to heart are the ones who are already doing what they can. I want to try to study with us about a word of encouragement to those who are doing what they can do, maybe and a little bit more. I would say that this is not an issue that only touches us at one time in our lives. When you're a college student and you're trying to deal with the responsibilities of a full-time class load and the labs, and you're trying to work a lot of times to help pay the bill, and when you have to do the laundry and keep the place and all that kind of stuff too, and all of the digital stuff has input into your life all the time, you'll meet this problem if you're trying to serve the Lord and use your talent and ability for Him. When you're a young parent and you have the constant demands of the attention your little ones need, you're often working too, and your career is going along, and you're trying to keep up with that. Oftentimes you are the people who have the kids involved in this activity and that activity and that activity, and then you're helping to do things with the congregation as well, and trying to volunteer and serve in different ways, then you surely are going to meet this problem. And the surprise is, when you get some of the rest of our age, you thought that would, maybe that would back off some, and then you find out what it is to still trying to be keeping up with work and trying to attend to aging parents and their needs and trying to be a grandparent, and you find out that a lot of the tasks and congregational work or community service also still fall on you, then this stays a pretty practical problem. I want to use Paul's question with only one particular direction with it tonight. 2 Corinthians chapter 2. Paul has been through some very difficult hardship, and he thinks of himself and his ministry as a captive of Christ being led along in triumph to show the world what a victory has been won. He's that to the Lord. He says, we are the aroma of Christ to God among those who are being saved and those who are perishing. And he says, to one a fragrance from death to death, and the other a fragrance from life to life. And then his question, and this is a prominent thought in 2 Corinthians, who is sufficient for these things? Who's competent for these things? Who's able? Who's qualified for all of this? Think of it specifically with the management of our time, ability, and energy. And a few words to those who are doing what you can, and then some. These are some principles that seem to me to stand out in the New Testament. First, the Lord would advise us to operate under the principle that God wants our whole lives to be lived in service to Him, and not only the programs that involves church work. I'm not trying to lessen interest in the projects of a congregation or in the things that we have to do to make our life together work. But I'm just saying that God, the proper response to the mercies of God is for us to present our bodies a living sacrifice to Him. Romans 12 and verse 1. And if we take that approach, then we can begin to figure out that rather than running here or there only for special projects, that instead how we attend to our jobs, how we treat our families, how we relate to our neighbors, how we conduct ourselves at leisure, and in every other way, that is service to God as well. That is what Paul calls our reasonable service. Some versions will say our spiritual worship to God is that task or that part of this idea. This month, Harding University, and it's in a little magazine it sends out about the school, has entered a section where they've invited graduates to answer this question. What's the best way for Christians to be a light to the world? And I noticed that one young man's answer to this, he's a 2000 graduate of that school. We're living as light when people can clearly see the Lordship of Jesus Christ in the ordinary details of our lives. Either He's Lord of all of it, or He's Lord of none of it. We must not hide it or hide Him in the church building. Well, that's similar to the point that I'm asking us to consider here. This is a principle that we should live our whole lives in view of. And so our doing what we can in the service of the Lord doesn't end up being something extra as opposed to our regular lives, but a part of our, it will be a part of our lives in that way. Something that's normal, something that's a part of who we are, something that we would think to be natural for a child of God. Second, bear in mind, and I've adapted this quote from an article I'm about to share with you, or a paragraph. Bear in mind that the ordinary over the years has proved more useful to God than the spectacular. If you remember Paul's image of the church functioning like members of the body in 1 Corinthians 12, one of the points that he makes in that passage is that in the body, those parts which are most essential or most indispensable are not the ones that are apparent, the ones that we would see, the ones that we would comment about and so forth. And that is a way of saying that God often does use the ordinary things in life. And here's a paragraph. I don't know this writer. He's a man named Ernest Campbell. He writes, "It is wiser, I believe, to energize the usual than to schedule the unusual." And his point is that has to do with service to the Lord. He says to slight the fundamental services while casting about for some gala event that will provide instant invigoration is to forget that the ordinary over the years has proved more useful to God than the spectacular. And if you think about the things that really matter in all of our lives, you have to agree that a lot of it is just the regular stuff we have to do every day in order to survive. Not very glorious, but it surely is important. Lanny Henniger wrote one time, "One may not remember all the meals his mother has cooked over the years, but they were nourishing. And one may not recall the details of sermons and services long after the closing prayer, but they're valuable too." And in our interaction with each other, in our family life and so on, that's very much the case as well. I ran across an article by, I ran across this little piece because of our involvement with the Know Your Bible TV work. Mark Yakeley is the one of the ministers for the Northside congregation in Wichita. And Mark wrote about a conversation he had with one of his students in one of his classes who happened to be a young adult or a high school or a college, early years of college student. And he said that he was having a conversation with this young man when he pointed out in their conversation that being close to God is not always on fire or awesome. He said, what he told his student is this, "What no one shares with you when you're young is that Christianity is boring." Now don't give up on this yet. No one tells you that, but Christianity, for the most part, is boring. No one tells you that Christianity is a 70 to 80 year grind at becoming more kind, more gentle, more giving, more joyful, more patient, and more loving. You learn that God isn't the amped-up worship experience. What you learn after college is that the holy ground is standing patiently in line. You learn that holy ground is learning to listen well to your child or to your wife or to your coworker. Holy ground is being a reliable and unselfish friend or family member and being a good nurse when someone's sick. Holy ground is awkward and unlikely friendship. Holy ground is often just showing up. Being more and more like Jesus is a million boring little things. No one ever tells you that, but they need to. And so I want to tell you that. A whole lot of what will make your life work is not very glorious at the time. God uses ordinary things and regular people. Number three, while we are trying to do everything, it'll help if we remember to think of our use of time and our daily duties as one way to make our beliefs more beautiful to our neighbors who are around us. And this is an obligation that we share, by the way. In Titus chapter 2, one of the statements that Paul makes is to people who at the time they became Christians were slaves. That would be, and to our way of thinking, such a terrible thing that the immediate thing to be done would be to rebel or to correct the social injustice that was occurring. In their day, it was a form of an economic system. People were slaves sometimes to pay debts, or sometimes they were counted as members of households in order to, they had food and clothing and so forth. In that way, it was what they had to deal with. So Paul writes to older men and younger or older women and younger men and younger women, and then he writes to slaves, and he tells them to be submissive to their own masters and everything. They're to be well-pleasing, not argumentative, not pilfering, but showing all good faith, so that in everything they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior. Now what that would mean is, conduct yourself so that the Lord you believe in will look attractive or beautiful to the onlooker who doesn't know why you are living like you are yet. So if a person could do that in the most difficult of situations that you and I could matter, then perhaps I can think, while I'm at school this week, or while I'm going to work, or while I'm doing my church work, or while I'm trying to get along with Orrin and Nadine across the street, maybe I can think about what would be the way I can address my responsibilities so that the Lord I believe in will impress people who haven't heard about Him yet. A fourth principle I mentioned for us is that it would be really helpful for us if we can gradually learn to serve effectively without adding additional items to an already crowded agenda. I hope as a congregation we can improve or increase what we try to do together, or our programs, or I hope we can think of a better way to do things. But I'm also trying to encourage us by simply thinking about ourselves, how we can honor the Lord and how we can bear fruit in His service, to do this a bit more naturally in our lives. In Philippians 1 and verse 13, we're reading along. Paul is talking to the Philippians about wanting them to know how things have turned out with him in an imprisonment or a hardship. And he tells them that he wants them to know that this has all turned out for the furtherance of the gospel, and that even the people in the imperial guard, the praetorium, have heard about Christ by what he's going through. Now, you know that that did not happen because of a planned program that Paul had written down on a to-do list for that day. It happened by him being a great Christian man and a servant who was looking for every opportunity he could to put in a good word for the Lord. And even by the way he bore his imprisonment and by the questions people might have asked about who is this fellow and why is he going through this and all of that, there was an effective service that occurred unscheduled in this great man's life. And a lot of the service that the church needs to offer up to the Lord occurs this way. Who will you meet this week in the line at the grocery store or in the kids' school activities or in the extracurricular activities that you're involved in at school or in any other unscheduled, unplanned connection that you make during this week? That will be an opportunity for what we're talking about here. And it won't be something that adds to what you feel like you've got to get done. And it won't be something bound on you by pressure. And it may do more good than could have been done any other way. And then, just leave us with this last one. One thing that any of us can do with our list of things is to make a list of our duties, what we have to do during a day or during the week, and then pray over it. But pray with the view toward what belongs on that list and what doesn't. If things are beginning to be overwhelming, then are the things on that list worth it? If things are becoming routine or complacent, then is there something that ought to be on that list that's not? I don't know how many of us who are here who are list makers, to-do lists. I'm not. I have in my mind things that I stew over and want to get done, but I never get to number one on the list. So maybe you're that way too. Whether it's actually written down or whether it's in our heads, it would be good for us to think enough about what we're trying to do that we could pray over it specifically. And then let it come clear to us what is not worth the burden and what ought to become an interest to us in our lives. I believe in 1 Corinthians this is one of the things that happens with Paul. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, if you look down a few verses, you notice in verses 5 and 6, not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything as coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God, who has made us sufficient to be ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. This is a life and death matter with Paul, and obviously no person is sufficient in and of himself for this. But God is. This letter goes along and Paul recounts many things that he's been through or that he goes through in service to the Lord. And you come over to chapter 12 and he famously speaks of the thorn in his flesh, something that's a mystery to us. We wonder about it. He mentions three times I pleaded with the Lord. This is verse 8, 2 Corinthians 12. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And ultimately, one of the things for us to bear in mind with all the stuff we have to do is that there's got to be a place for grace in it. Those of us who feel like everything depends on us maybe need the gentle reminder that it really doesn't always, and that we're, after all, serving in the interest of the grace of God. That's one reason we feel good about inviting people, even busy people, even people who already are trying, to know that the Lord wants them to respond to the gospel and to be involved in His service. Jesus could say, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. But we find out that when people come to Him, He doesn't say, now, don't ever do anything anymore. He invites us to be useful, to be of service. But the reason we do it has changed. And that's my reminder to all of us tonight. If you're here wanting to become a Christian, we would love to hear you make the good confession and to assist you in being baptized into Christ. And if you're a Christian who got overwhelmed and gave up, may we encourage you to rethink that. And remember that your best chance of fulfillment in life is serving the Lord faithfully all the way through. If we can help you tonight, let us know by coming while we stand and sing together.